Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this November 15th, 2022. It is 10:31 o'clock, and you have your host, James, here. I am joined right now by our friends from the United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. We have Community Engagement Director Ben Eberlein with us. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, James.
Good to see you, man. It's been a while.
It has. I'm excited to be back.
How have you been?
I'm doing well, enjoying this beautiful winter wonderland we have out here.
Yeah, yeah. I do believe that in order to work with Terry, you have to say that you enjoy the snow. Whether you do or not, you would. No, I'm kidding. But we do say a good morning to Terry and the gang over there at the United Way. They will be joining us, of course, tomorrow, along with yourself and plenty of others, with our WFHR Radiothon with the United Way tomorrow from 7 to 10:30. Keep that in mind, everybody. And just wanted to put a quick shout out there for that. What we're here today to discuss, though, Ben, is the ALICE report and kind of the details of that. First, before we dive into the numbers and some of those things, let's explain to the audience what this is in first, what the ALICE report is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that reminder. It's you know, sometimes we get in the weeds with acronyms.
And yes.
Yeah, ALICE, when we talk about the ALICE report, ALICE is basically, it's just an acronym that means Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. So basically it just describes people, you know, a portion of our population that have enough income to be above the poverty line, but they're one small emergency away from falling below that line. So, yeah. I mean, these people are often, usually they're working more than one job, trying to make ends meet. So they've got that employment, right? But because of their income and that employment, they don't qualify for a lot of the assistance programs or things like food share. They might not qualify for a full benefit. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, they're doing their best to get by. And because of that, it kind of works against them. But
we used to look at that as the person living check to check.
Yeah.
And boy, that I guarantee every time we do this every year, when we give that detail of who is under the ALICE umbrella, there are people out there listening that didn't even know they were a part of that, that didn't even know that they were into this group. And then you hear some of the, well, wait a minute, that's me. Oh, wow, check, check, and check. So many of us grew up with the idea of classes, you know, the rich, the middle class, the poor, and really outside of that top 1% now, everybody else is just kind of mixed together. And so many, almost, I would say overwhelmingly majority of a lot of people find themselves in that, under that ALICE umbrella than you know, maybe when we were kids or something like that. It's skewed a little bit now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important to keep in mind when we talk about these numbers.
That's you really nailed it, though. I mean, when you said check to check, I mean, when you're living like that, too, every dollar goes to your basic needs. It goes to right now. You know, it goes to getting through to the next day. You don't have the capacity to save for your retirement. You don't have the capacity to save for an emergency. What if you get a flat tire or your fridge stops working? And then much less, you know, looking at your kids' futures, too, you know.
Oh, God. And just the idea of being in that situation as a parent, as just an adult, of having to decide, do I get food or do I fix my tire? Like, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be a situation. But there's so many people in those situations.
Well, so many people, like you said, too, that probably don't even realize, you know, they might skip lunch or something because they're making sure that their kids have three meals a day.
Right.
And they don't, that doesn't register to them as something that, you know.
Especially when you add on a couple of factors. One, that's what most parents just do. It's just in their DNA. It's in their blood. This is what they do. Put my kids first. Yeah. It's what the majority of parents do. But then you add on top of the fact of Midwesterners and our mentality. And we don't ask for help. We don't reach out. And we don't often think that we need help. Yeah. Oh, we just, you know what? I'll walk it off. I got a bad leg here. I'll walk it off. No, your leg's barely hanging on, man. I'll walk it off. Like, that's what we do here in the Midwest. It's who we are. So, I mean, that's just with physical stuff, let alone with financial things or anything like that. Well, we don't talk about finances. We don't talk about those things. And we certainly aren't going to ask for a handout or ask for help. Keep this in mind as we go along with this conversation, everybody. For one, nobody gets through life alone. And two, the United Way or the majority of our nonprofits, the majority of these things are not trying to give you a handout. It's a hand up. It's a hand up. It's trying to get people on their feet so they can go ahead and keep running on their own feet, on their own body, you know, their own will and all that. It's important to keep those things in mind as we go along in this conversation. And I think it adds to the conversation. What is the ALICE report, Ben?
Yeah, exactly. So that's ALICE, right? So the ALICE report basically just gives a snapshot of our community, but a more accurate portrayal of what poverty looks like here in terms of ALICE, looking at, okay, what does it actually cost for, let's say, a family of four with, you know, two parents, two children in child care? What does it cost for that family to survive in Wood County? And the ALICE report takes it a step further. You know, a lot of the things that we base our understanding of, you know, inflation or whatever off of, you know, things like that, you know, maybe it's based off the consumer price index. Whereas, you know, that includes things like the cost of cars and TVs and clothing, which probably paid roughly the same amount for a T-shirt 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas over the last 15 years, the cost of housing and childcare and groceries has gone through the roof. And so we can look at the actual cost of essentials, which has risen at, you know, double the rate of the consumer price index over the last 15 years. And we can get an actual, you know, more accurate view of what poverty looks like. So we can say, you know, what does it actually cost for that family to survive? And then, you know, how many households in our community, and whether it's Wood County or, you know, whatever, how many of those households are trying to survive on an income that's below that level?
Right. Do we have any stats from the Wood County area? Do we have anything from that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, what we're talking about today is just, you know, the ALICE report and some of the new stuff that's coming out.
Yeah.
So that's what we're really excited, looking forward to that data. So right now, the information we have is from the 2020 report. And based on that, we're looking at Wood County. You know, probably shock a lot of people to hear that one in every three households, you know, one of those three households is, you know, falling below what we call the ALICE threshold. They don't have enough money to meet their basic needs. And if we can actually zero in with the incredible dashboards that they have for this data, looking at just the city of Wisconsin Rapids, 46%. So, I mean, almost half of the households in this city, they're in that category. Like you said, they probably don't even realize it, half of them. And so it's kind of shocking, and I think that would really open a lot of people's eyes.
And something else to keep in mind, that's the worst in Wood County I'm seeing.
Wisconsin Rapids, based on that 2020 report, the city of Wisconsin Rapids was the, you know, when we break it down by individual municipality, you know, overall in the county, it was that one in three households, but yeah.
And then how about senior households?
Yeah, and so that's another thing. I mean, obviously, we have a very rural, very aging community, and, you know, looking at, you can specifically break it down by age and household makeup. 40% of our senior households are in that category of not able to afford their basic needs.
All these numbers are usually kind of staggering to me. Something like that just gets me borderline angry to think of that, our seniors are in that situation. It's not surprising necessarily, unfortunately, but it is kind of like, dang it, that's not right. Hopefully we can fix that, or hopefully we know better now with seeing these numbers. This data, some of this stuff, like the one in three households thing. Well, maybe it's shocking to some, maybe it isn't. But either way, whether it is or it isn't, it's actual factual data. Like, we can assume things. When we have the actual numbers, when we get the readouts from these reports, that's where we can really do some work. That's where the United Way, I should say, can really start putting in some work and really doing what the United Way does best, making communities better, making them stronger, making them thrive and all these things, seeing where we need to put the, you need to put the focus and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, it's frustrating, and maybe not, you know, anger might be part of that, but it's frustrating because, you know, it's not, you recognize that it's not right, and people shouldn't have to live in making these extremely difficult decisions day to day.
Another interesting thing coming out of this is the new brief on veterans in financial hardship. And this is something that I've been hitting on for a couple of years now. Now it's nice to have some actual data to bring to the conversation.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, the last full report we have is from 2020. We're going to get a new report next year, so really looking forward to dive into that information.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, United for ALICE, who commissions this report, they've released a couple briefs this year that they're just, you know, really focused on certain populations. And the one they released on last Friday, coinciding with Veterans Day, Was just really taking a close look at veterans in financial hardship. So we can actually get real data on the veterans that live in Wisconsin. And unfortunately, you know, after, you know, serving and sacrificing for their country, the last thing we want is for veterans to come back and not be able to afford their basic needs. But when you look at the numbers, one in five of our Wisconsin's veterans, and they're doing exactly that. They're coming back and living check to check, or, you know. So it's just, you know, we get a lot of that information from that report. Yeah. I think.
I was just going to say, do you mind going through some of these numbers for us, Ben? Because they're important, and they're staggering. Yeah. It's really, I mean, I've been covering this subject for a while. I've been reporting on it. I've been talking about it. And these numbers are still new to me, even. And I'm pretty in the know of a lot of this stuff.
That's what I love about these reports, because they come out and they have these interactive dashboards, and you can really drill down on specifics. And, you know, we all know that people with disabilities face financial hardship at a significantly higher rate, right? Mm-hmm. And we know that a lot of veterans, whether it's service-based or not, they do report having disabilities. So almost a third of all veterans, not just, you know, Alice, not just Wisconsin, a third of all veterans report having a disability. Mm. Now, if we look at disabled veterans, they're twice as likely to face financial hardship.
Yeah.
So, again, it's just these things compounding, and it's really hard to see that. I mean, I know you're interested in a lot. We got so many awesome nitty-gritty details, but, you know, looking at some of the things that are really facing the community as a whole right now, housing is one of those big things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pulling from this report specifically, looking at our veterans in financial hardship in Wisconsin, 95% of them are overburdened by the cost of housing. And I guess just to clarify, when I say overburdened, I mean these are households that are spending over 35% of their income on rent or their mortgage and utilities. Like, to be spending that much on just having a roof over your head, you can see why, you know, it can be so hard to get food on the table or pay for health care, especially adding a disability on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Only 17% of ALICE veterans enrolled in food share. That speaks to me to, again, not understanding that you're in this situation, you know, and again, maybe this conversation or seeing the report on your own self or what have you will wake you up to that and realize that and be a part of, because we do have good food share programs and everything, and not that that's a magic bullet that's going to solve any of this, but it's important to know that these things are, that you could use these things, that they're out there for you. The military spouses part, I wouldn't mind. Would you mind touching on that part too as well, Beth?
Yeah. Well, I just do want to call back. I think you just spent enough time around Terry and you're just, you know, dialed in on this.
Yes.
I think what you said earlier too about you know, Midwesterners, Wisconsinites, I mean, just not wanting to ask for help too. I think that 17% of the veterans in financial hardship, only 17% of them enrolled in food share. I think that speaks to not wanting to ask for help and doing our best to walk it off.
And you know, one of the things I want to take, I hope people take from this conversation, is the encouragement to reach out. It is not a handout. It's help up. You know, every one of us have been in a part in life where we fall down. You're playing sports or whatever you're doing, and your partner pulls you up. You know, somebody pulls you up off the ground. That's all this is. It's just a pull. You don't refuse that hand up because, no, I'm not weak. No, you take the hand. Take the hand, get yourself on your feet, and then you can worry about everything else later. Just get on your own feet again, and especially to our military, to our service members, to our veterans and all that. I mean, anybody, any citizen I'm talking to here, but in part them, because not only the new data we're getting from this report, but because I know, growing around military people and everything, I know you guys aren't going to ask for help. I know that's your way, and I appreciate that, and I respect that. This is where it's okay. If you don't do it for yourself, do it for your family. But reach out. It is there. There is help there for you. We are speaking again with Ben from, he is the Community Engagement Director with the United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. We'll take a really quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to look ahead to the 2023 ALICE report with you, Ben. We'll do that when we come back here on Morning Magazine at WFHR. Welcome back, everybody, to Morning Magazine for this November 15th, 2022. 10:47 on the clock. Sitting here with Ben from the United Way talking about the ALICE report. And again, thanks for being here, Ben. Appreciate the time.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to share this information.
If you don't mind, if we can go back just for a second to that previous conversation, I mentioned military spouses. I want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, is another one of those things that I think people don't recognize, or even, you know, it's not something that it is understood, but military spouses are actually much more likely to be unemployed or underemployed than their civilian counterparts. And simply, I mean, that might sound odd, but I mean, frequent relocation just during those prime earning years, when, you know, those families are jumping around the country or the world, it just for their service, you know, that can severely limit career advancement, earnings for the spouse. But then, I mean, that affects overall income, too. Especially when you look at higher levels of education are linked to lower levels of financial hardship. So, you know, we know 60% of veterans over 25, they only have a high school diploma, even though, you know, their VA benefits that help with cost of tuition, finding school and training programs, career counseling. So when you have your one producer basically in the household, that, you know, they're already at a disadvantage because they may not have the same higher level education. If the spouse then is underemployed too, it's just, I mean, the whole household is at a disadvantage.
Yeah. It's not just what we ask of our soldiers. It's their families we're asking. That while it may be an individual that is going off to war, going to fight, or any of these things, or defend our country, the family that is left at home, their sacrifice cannot be taken lightly. And I think that for overall, we have our moments in society, especially this time of year, where we celebrate military families, and, you know, we'll watch the videos of the dad coming home and the kid getting to see him and all that, and we feel good from it and everything, and that's really great, and that's wonderful. We could do that. I would like to add on to that also caring about those families on a deeper level and seeing, you know, reaching out as neighbors. Hey, do you need anything? Hey, can we help with anything? Or maybe even just doing it. Because if you ask, they're probably going to say, no, we're fine. Maybe if you notice that they're in it, helping out, and certainly sharing the information of resources that are available for those families. Like making it almost so that they can't refuse. That's what you have to do to Midwesterners oftentimes. You know, we've all been there. We know what that's like. You know somebody's hungry. They don't want to eat. Just put it in front of them, you know, and make them eat. Like, I mean, honestly, it's not to say, I'm not telling people to force your way into people's houses or anything like that. I don't mean it like that. I just mean that oftentimes you know somebody is hurting. You can just set the information up there. Just give it to them, put it out there, bring it up in conversation. You never know what that might help and how much it might help them. And anything we can do for our family. Because while that person is off fighting, that man, that woman that is off fighting for us or off defending us, they should be able to focus. They're going to be worried about their family no matter what, but especially be worrying if they're a family in this situation like this. The least we can do, and I do mean the least we can do as a society, is make sure that that soldier has one less thing to worry about, and we're helping their families here at home. This is the deal. This is the one of the easier deals we have in society. Like, we can make this work. And these numbers from the Alice Report speak to how important it is we get on this now. We start doing something about this now. I do want to look ahead with you a little bit to the 23 Alice Report. What can you tell us about that, Ben?
Yeah, like I said earlier, last report was 2020. So when we get the report in 2020, that's actually data from 2018. So right now, the information we're looking at is a couple years old. So looking at the report we get next year is going to be really the first real data, real analysis of what things are looking like after the onset of the pandemic. Give us an updated understanding of, you know, how things have progressed since the last collection, and much more in depth than like the brief on veterans that I mentioned is state level report. The full 2023 ALICE report, we're going to get a much more zeroed in look. We can dig into those the statistics about Wisconsin Rapids or Wood County or our region as a whole.
Really looking forward to seeing that report when it does come out. I'm very curious to see how much these numbers jump or decline too, because that's I don't want to say a huge gap, but we certainly have had a couple of things happen between 2018 and now. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But it also is a reminder. I think we can assume, and I don't like to assume things in life, but I think we can assume for the most part that some of these numbers will be more in need, if anything. If we're wrong, great. That's wonderful. But I would not assume, I would not jump into this and think, oh, it'll be a lot better in the 23 report. If anything, I think some of these things may even be more eye-catching.
I think that's the whole point, too, with the essentials index versus your consumer price index, looking at how different those two things are and how the cost of essentials has, over the last 15 years pre-pandemic, has been increasing at a much higher rate. So that was the thing that caught my attention. If we look at the poverty guidelines for 2022, and then we have our Alice Essentials Index, and this is from 2018. The 2018 Essentials Index is still, in depending on household makeup, we have 1-2 person children. The Essentials Index from 2018 on a monthly income required to survive is still almost double what the 2022 poverty guidelines are.
It's crazy.
So when we see this updated information from 2023, we see that essentials index, housing is probably going to double. Childcare is probably going to double from what was required to be a budget for minimum to survive in 2018 is going to be 2-3 times what it was. Or it'll be in 2023, it'll be 2-3 times that much.
So this is it's all important and factual and really vital data, and it helps a lot to have this stuff. But once you get these numbers, once we get this data, it feels like that's when the work really begins. How do you use the info at the United Way?
Yeah, exactly. And first and foremost, we shed light on the reality of what poverty looks like here. What we're doing right now is one of the most effective things is just talking about it and making people aware of the issues and what it really looks like versus some of the outdated metrics that we're used to using. The other thing is how we use this information. Like you said, that's where the work begins is, we can use this to look at what we're doing and see if that validates our strategies and the investments we're making in our community programs that serve the ALICE population every day. Look at what our coalitions are doing, the work that we're doing in these areas of impact. And then at the end of the day, the data supports all the other things we're doing, all the other input that we get from community surveys, our stakeholder conversations, make sure we're on the right track.
I was speaking to this on the morning show a bit, and we will, of course, during Radiothon tomorrow as well. But it's something that I admire so much in the United Way. When we were kids growing up, most nonprofits, this is what we do, and hopefully it benefits our community. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. This is just what we do. More and more, our nonprofits, and specifically the United Way, with this report, this data, these kind of things, are much more. They're able to really tune in to where they want to affect and make change. We all understand that nonprofits, no nonprofit has billions of dollars in their surplus or something like that. You have to be smart with your money. You have to be, okay, choose your battles wisely. Where am I going to invest? What am I going to really attack here? And then they get these reports, they get this data, they take community surveys, all this information, and figure out, okay, we got an issue with hunger in our area. We've got an issue with literacy or what have you. And the United Way gets to work and starts doing what only the United Way really does it so well over at the United Way, and hitting these on these different factors, the different things.
Yeah, then we couldn't do it without all the amazing partnerships, your help here. I mean, people in the community doing the same thing, just spreading the word. And when we can bring people together and unite the community, that's where we see the greatest impact. We have 28 different partner programs, and we see 20,000 people collectively impacted in our service area by the work we're doing. But it's all thanks to the community members that are contributing to this, to our campaign, getting the word out there, funding those programs, and making sure they can continue to do that direct service on a daily basis.
Let's touch on that a little bit, because I know that a lot of the listeners out there, they got a lot of heart, they care, and they want to know, well, this is all daunting, this is all a lot. What can I do? How can I help any of these things? They seem so big. And you can. Every individual can. Anybody can make an impact on this and make a dent in this. And every dent brings it down and maybe make these numbers a little bit better in that 2023 survey and all that. So let's shed some light on that a little bit, Ben. And you touched on it already about different ways people can help. Some of the more effective ways of impacting things? Certainly financially, when you're able to invest dollars and cents to the United Way, man, that goes a long way, and it's so helpful. And whether it's $5, $500, whatever it is greatly appreciated. Every donation is greatly appreciated, and it's an investment in your community. But there are also so many people out there that are, as we've mentioned, under this umbrella. And they can't help. They want to, but they can't help financially. But you can impact your community volunteering and doing different things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you keep talking about the problems. Get in touch with our volunteer center. If you have time, you don't have necessarily money, but you have maybe a few hours you can help. There's plenty of ways. Like I said, we have 28 different partner programs in the area that we fund those programs, but, they're all nonprofits as well. And they, like you said, nobody's got billions of dollars in surplus. A lot of the things that need doing are done by volunteer work. And so that's something that we're always going to need more volunteers. And everybody out there that's listening probably has expertise in something that can be extremely valuable to one of our programs. So
let's say that you heard Ben and I talking about the hunger situation or something like that, and there's maybe not a volunteer opportunity involved with that or something. Being a part of like the reading mentor program, something like that, like you may not think it, but that is going to affect that as well. Everything is tied together. And if you're helping a kid learn to read, you may be giving them their parents a little more of a break, a little more of a relief or something, which is going to give them a chance to focus on something else or to maybe focus on, food or what have you. We all understand, especially if you're a parent of any kind, you understand that it all bleeds together. It's all connected and everything. So helping with one thing, you can realize will impact other things as well. It's all connected.
And at the end of the day, I mean, I don't want to discount the incredible impact that a dollar does have.
Yes.
If you're able to, please, take advantage of some of the benefits, too. You can donate, and you're not only going to help all of our partner programs, like I said, those 20,000 people across our footprint, that they're directly impacted by that funding. There are initiatives like our Help Guide, the Learning for Life Reading Mentor Program that you mentioned, My Free Taxes, the Single Care Prescription Discount Program, stuff the school bus, great book. I mean, all of these programs, our volunteer center is also in there, our 2-on-1 resource line, which serves 13 counties here locally with a connection to 4,000 resources. Donate online, you can do it by mail, over the phone, stop at 351 Oak Street. Mm-hmm. And if you can, I'd recommend people, participate in your payroll deduction program through your employer if that's an option, because some employers even offer bonuses like PTO, matching donations. You can maximize your gift, your mm-hmm. contribution, if there is a matching option. So
it's a great thing to mention. I didn't think about that part, that last part you mentioned. That's a good thing to mention. And a shout out to all those businesses that do those kind of things. Very cool. And a really good conversation today, Ben. Thank you so much for joining us. Say hi to the staff over there and everything. And you know what? Tell them to get ready, because tomorrow's go time. It is go time. The United Way Radiothon going to be tomorrow, 7 to 10:30. We're looking so forward to having you guys here in the studio with us. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. And stick around, everybody. More great stuff coming up right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, where we are locally grown radio.